Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Attention, collectors of vinyl. Have you ever gone into a record store and felt overwhelmed by all the unfamiliar options? Are you frustrated by the constantly increasing prices of classic rock staples? Do you avoid streaming music or long for the days when music was recommended to you by a friend instead of an algorithm? If the answer to any of these questions is yes, then check out I'd Buy That for a Dollar, a podcast about inexpensive, common, and underappreciated records that are waiting to be rediscovered. Each week, hosts Sean, Jeremy, and Peter discuss an album and the artist's history. Previous episodes include selections by the Isley Brothers, the Carpenters, the Doobie Brothers, and Donna Summer, among others. Become a bargain bin pro and impress all your friends with cool music trivia. Listen to I'd Buy That for a Dollar wherever you get your podcasts. Please consider supporting Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. You can learn more about them at bwunited.ca. They are always looking for donations and volunteers. So please, again, support Black Women United YEG for the protection and advancement of Black women and girls in Alberta. Again, that website is bwunited.ca.
Hey, this is Trevor from Halifax calling in to say that I support Creative Control on Patreon because I think long-form arts journalism is a crucial part of music culture and there's simply not enough of it out there today. Vish is a master interviewer, he lands great guests, and he has his finger on the pulse of the ever-changing music landscape both here in Canada and abroad. For all of these reasons and many more, I think you should support Creative Control on Patreon too.
To make your flexible monthly donation to Creative Control, please visit patreon.com/creativecontrol today. I'm Visha's wife, and I will love him no matter what you do. And now he has me on the record saying that.
Let's move to the country. Let's move to the country. Just you and me. A goat and a monkey. A mule and a flea. Let's move to the country, just you and me.
Bill Callahan is a gifted songwriter, singer, and musician who currently lives in Austin, Texas. Over the past 30 years, Callahan has made some of the most significant rock and folk music of our time, first under the name Smog, and then since 2007 under his own name. His latest album is called Gold Record, which includes one old Smog tune called Let's Move to the Country, but is otherwise a fresh, wry batch of standalone, narrative-based songs, which Drag City Records released on September 4th, 2020. Bill and I had a chat recently about Gold Record, processing the news but also lots of comedy as well. Working Weddings, Johnny Cash and Leonard Cohen, the state of late-night TV talk shows, his love for Ry Cooder, Missing David Berman, Drumming and the Drums, Future Plans, and much more. We didn't get to the Smog cover song, and I'm sorry. I forgot. It was on my mind, but I forgot. Otherwise, great. This is a good chat. A part of the Entertainment One Network with the support of listeners like you who follow and subscribe to this podcast and spread the word about it and make flexible monthly donations at patreon.com/creativecontrol and Massey Hall's concert film series live at MasseyHall.com, where you can stream dozens of 30-minute films for free, including performances by past podcast guests like Chad Van Galen, plus in-kind support from Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton. This is the 562nd episode of Creative Control, featuring the lovely and talented Bill Callahan, with your host, me, Vish Khanna.
Let's move to the country, just me and you.
Hi, Bill. How's it going?
Good.
It's nice to have you back on the show. It's nice to chat with you. It's nicer to chat with you to have you back on the show, if I might correct myself. Does that resonate with you? I'm just happy we're talking.
Yeah. I mean, show business is my life. So.
Where in the world are you today, Bill?
I'm in Austin. In Austin, Texas. And... you know, I just before you started recording, I told you that our kitchen had just been gutted, and now I'm sitting out on the front porch, and a truck pulled up called E.T. Plumbing, and it's got E.T.'s finger on it turning on a faucet.
There's a lot of that's awesome. There's a lot of funny, or at least wannabe funny, general contractors, aren't there? They all have like funny puns. Have you seen anything else? Like I'm trying to think of some I've seen, but I like it. I'm more compelled to go with a company that has a pun in their name than one that's like, we are very professional.
Yeah. Playfulness is good.
You know? Well, I'm sorry to hear about your kitchen there. How is everything else in the state of Texas going from your vantage point?
Well, you know, looking at my direct surroundings, everything seems fine. You know, there's no zombies in the street or trying to infect me. You know,
no zombies is always good. That's a good situation to be in. If there's no zombies, okay, good.
If I look at the news, there's a lot of just the worst things ever happening in my lifetime in just about every aspect of life that is out there. So I try not to look at the news more than once a day, and then that has made me a lot happier. And I hope everybody can do that.
Is there a particular time of the day? Do you wait till the sort of middle of the day? Because I was just saying this to my wife, that we have to stop either processing serious information or indulging in a discussion about serious family things just before bed, because I find it leads to restless and damaged sleep. Is there a particular time of day that works best for you to process the hard truths of our collective condition?
I think probably around like 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, just because, you know, I've done my work in the morning. It's like the most like energetic and productive time is like 9 a.m. till 2 or something. And then, you know, you can check in with that outside world, and then you still have like dinner to look forward to.
Yeah.
If, you know, and TV, TV after, you know, before bed. And so I try to put it, Sanders in the middle.
Right. Okay. So I think we're on the same wavelength, though. Do you agree with me that it's good not to deal with the terrible things? Because I tend to read books, novels, nonfiction before bed to help me sleep. And by the same token, now I'm like, this novel is very disturbing. And this work of nonfiction is not good. And then I try to sleep. And then again, tainted sleep. So I don't know. Am I overthinking this? Maybe I can't decide if I'm just,
I've totally, even like violent TV shows, which I thought I was kind of immune to, you know, the whole thing of like being affected by, you know, like I thought I had that separation. Well, this is just a TV show or a movie. Like it's not really like penetrating my psyche. But then I just noticed like watching violent things before bed, I would always have a nightmare. So it's, you know, a strict diet of the American office before bed.
Yeah. I'm on, as we're speaking, I'm on Curb Your Enthusiasm, Seinfeld. I'm in kind of a Larry David zone. Are you familiar with those shows?
I am.
Yeah. Do you like them?
Yeah, those are great. I also like that Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee. It's kind of a good bedtime show.
You know what the best one I think might be, and people will argue, I have a lot of favorites, but I like the Jamie Foxx one. I was not expecting to like the Jamie Foxx episode as much as I did, but he's very entertaining. Have you seen that one?
I haven't seen that one.
It's good. Did you purposely skip it? Because you're like, I don't like Jamie Foxx. Are you that kind of person? Because it's not that I dislike him actively. I was just like, I like Letterman. You know, I'm going to watch the Letterman one. And the Norm Macdonald one, like there were ones I wanted to watch, Tina Fey, these kinds of people. But I didn't think Eddie Murphy, my go-to wasn't going to be Jamie Foxx, but it actually has sent me down Jamie Foxx YouTube wormholes. He's very entertaining. He's very funny.
Yeah, I knew that from he has a radio show, or I don't know if it's still going, but on Sirius XM. He had his own kind of party radio show that was like really hilarious.
Yeah. Does he have Texas roots? I feel like he does. In my head, he's from near where you are. Maybe, I'm sorry. This is not meant to be a Wikipedia Jamie Foxx entry. I don't know how that happened, but I just wanted to establish that we like Jamie Foxx.
Yeah, I got no idea where he's from.
I think he might be from Houston or something like that. Anyway, it's good. It's good. We're trying to find little things to, you know, distract us, I guess. And I want to, first of all, commend you and congratulate you on your new album, Gold Record. You have been doing a unique thing, I think, in that you have been releasing, is it about a song a week? Is that what you've done? You announced the album and then put one song a week on Mondays, right?
Yeah, except that just finished last Monday, and then I did the first 9 songs in order of, you know, the sequence of the record, and then the 10th song. I'd like to say you have to buy the record to hear that, but actually you don't. You just have to, it'll be all be streaming at once.
Right. Now, let me just ask you about the logistical decision to do this, to release each song in sequence. I'm sure you've been asked about this before, or people are wondering why you chose to do this, and I'm among them. Why, Bill? Why release the record in such a way?
You know, the way that I grew up is listening to records, and then my musical production career, you know, when I was in the studio, I was making a physical object in my head, you know, that was the end result. So when all that was kind of evaporated or stolen from me, as I like to say.
Sorry, just before you continue, and I don't mean to interrupt your train of thought, you just suggested something was stolen from you. And as both a police officer, well, actually, I shouldn't say that these days. I don't want to be a police officer. I was going to make a joke. No, as an investigative reporter, I need to know, what do you mean by that? What was stolen from you exactly, Bill?
You know, the pleasure of making physical objects.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah.
Having my, that's how the music is received.
Yeah.
By
right. Okay.
People.
Right. I assume that's what you meant. Sorry. I'm a bad investigative reporter. I'm asking silly, obvious questions. I apologize for interrupting. Please continue.
That's okay. So just looking for ways to experiment with streaming, which I think is not a very fun format, really. It's just a file. It's just words on a computer and you click on it. And so, you know, I did Shepherd a side at a time. The previous record, I released it one side at a time. Mm-hmm. And that seemed to work for that. And then for this record, the songs seem to be kind of standalone songs and not really as interconnected as, say, a lot of my previous records.
Right, right.
So it's kind of looking at them as individual songs that could be appreciated just like that, as one at a time.
Okay, so it is both a comment on current consumption habits, in a way, or at least a reaction to it, if not a comment, and as you say, the songs kind of stand alone, and I found that too. The last time you were on the show was just ahead of, you alluded to it, your last record was called Shepherd in a Sheepskin Vest. And so at the time when we spoke, I think I asked you about how it seemed particularly autobiographical, truthful to you and your life and your family, and I think you acknowledge that fact. And when I processed the songs on Gold Record, I had the notion that, oh, this seems more objectively observational, more storytelling kind of songs, narrative, fictional sort of narratives, fantastical narratives. Is that fair, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, each song is kind of like its own short story almost. Yeah, but you know, to me, it's all kind of the same. You know, it's just like what names you put on things. Like if I had, well, I guess it's not the same. I mean, obviously with the Shepherd record, I was, you know, actually trying to rein it into the walls of this house. And, but then with Gold Record, I just wanted to look out beyond the house into other people's lives and, yeah, just put a different perspective on things.
The one thing that strikes me is that your use of the pronoun I think on Shepherd, it really, I think that's what it was. I was like, this seems like you. Like when you sang I in various spots, or me or whatever, us, it felt like you and us, whereas when I think of songs like on the new record, there's a song called The Mackenzies, and I thought, oh, this seems like Bill. This seems like the Bill that we have come to know, you know, maybe neighbor shy or what have you, and funny, into the movies of Kid and Play. That seems like the Bill we know. But then as it went on, I'm like, oh, this has taken a twist. This has taken a turn. And so I'm not suggesting, obviously every song you write, Bill, is some reflection of your thoughts and feelings, but it's fair to say like these narrators, these eyes, not necessarily you, not you reflecting real lived experience, just more observational storytelling. Is that, I hope I'm not putting too much on it, but that's my reading of it. Is that a decent reading, Bill?
Well, I mean, I think you can, what matters in a story is the kernel of what it's about, you know? Mm. So you can tell a story with ghosts, but really it's like, you know, you're not going to say, hey, you know, I don't believe in ghosts, so this story doesn't mean anything to me, or this never happened because there's no such thing as dragons, or, I mean, all that matters is what the story is really about, you know?
Yeah, sure.
So whether or not the physical details of something, you know, with something like The Mackenzies, I'm more just trying to talk about the different, I mean, I see the world in a familial structure, you know, everything to me is has a mother and a father and is a daughter and a son, and you know, and we're all kind of looking to be fathered and mothered and to be a father and mother to ourselves and our friends and our sons and daughters and
yeah,
our music and our creations. And you know, so I just, it's the message is just dressed up in different clothing that might not actually be real.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, fair enough. So on Shepherd, when we talked about Shepherd, there was this, this, you know, you kind of acknowledged, you know, you'd gotten married and you'd had a child, and so that those experiences were, and you know, you'd lost parents. I think like you'd kind of were reflecting these real things, these real familial experiences. And when I think of the new record, I can see that same interest in, let's call it, nuclear families or domesticity even. I can see it, but it comes from it seems to me like you're looking at it more as from the outside. Like the song Pigeons, by the way. I'm not going to gush too much here, but I love these songs very much, and I've lived with them for a long time now, it feels like, already, because you released them, and also I got a copy of the record really early, so I've been living with these songs for a while, and I really love them, and the more I listen to them, I feel like I don't know, there's just more things that are coming to light about your relationship to your relationships, I suppose. In the song Pigeons, you take on the voice of a limo driver who basically drives newlyweds around, just like fresh off their weddings. And so your interest in marriage and weddings is coming through in a totally different prism than, here's my experience. You're kind of looking at it like from that person's perspective, someone outside but involved in this new union. And I wonder if that is that impulse from you to be like, maybe I should. I was really, the last record, I was really inside looking at what it's like to have this experience. What do the people just outside of that think, and what are they going through? What are they feeling? What is their perspective on it? Was that a conscious choice on your part to kind of, I don't know, look at your life from the perspective of someone just outside of it?
Yeah. I mean, I take great care with the sequencing of my records, but I try to sequence from the last record to the next record. So Pigeons, since it was such a similar, you know, in the same vein as the as Shepherd.
In terms of like like a motif.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it would, you know, help transition, you know, same motif, but like different perspectives. And I've been to a lot of weddings in the last 5 or 6 years because my wife is so goddamn charming and friendly that she has a million friends. And so I've had a lot of, besides my own wedding, I've had a lot of experience just observing and knowing that I always kind of feel like, depending on how well you know the person getting married, I mean, sometimes you know neither of them if they're friends of your wife, or sometimes you know one of them, but you don't know the partner that they're going to get married to.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of kind of awkward downtime where there's a bunch of people who don't know each other and they're just kind of making small talk and drinking too much because it's awkward. And so I started to think about, well, who has the best thing about my wedding was probably leaving. It's when you get to leave everyone behind, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And you get to go off with you on your new life. So thinking about the type of the limo driver that does that is kind of has the best job, and they're kind of like a guardian angel kind of escorting you from the purgatory of in between your unmarried life and your married life. And
yeah,
someone is kind of escorting you into your next world.
Yeah. Yeah. There's also what brought to mind for me is there's a whole cohort of people involved in a wedding that is very emotional and very excited and jubilant. But then there's this other cohort of workers who are completely dispassionate. I've played in sort of wedding bands, you know, ad hoc wedding bands. And it was a thing that started as a joke. And then people were like, hey, can you play our wedding? And we're like, oh, okay, now it's kind of this business. So you kind of are rolling into town. If you work in the service industry of some kind and you host weddings at a banquet hall every week, you are just doing your job. And in the midst of all this joy, this new feeling for so many people, and you've got, in your case, a limo driver who's, you know, he's something of a philosophical character and has a vantage point, as you say, on this new feeling that the new feeling experiencers just can't really fathom. I found that interesting in itself. This, you're saying yourself, you go to weddings, sometimes you know the people, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you're excited. Well, you didn't say this, but I assume that's what you're getting at. Like, sometimes you're emotionally invested, sometimes you're not. That's kind of odd because it couldn't, ideally, short of the birth of a child, a wedding should be, if that's not tugging at your heartstrings, what else is there, you know? So I feel like all of that's swimming around in that song as well.
Yeah, I do. I mean, in truth, I do. I missed up at just about 90% of the weddings that I go to, like during the ceremony. That part is usually affecting, you know, it's just the reception after that can kind of go on a little too long.
Yeah. But the emotional part gets to, you're not writing from a detached. In fact, I mean, I feel like, let me quote, roughly or paraphrase this limo driver, because at one point in this song, he's asked for advice by the newlyweds and he suggests that, you know, when you're dating, you only see each other, and I believe the line is the rest of us can go to hell, but when you are married, you're married to the whole wide world. And I feel like, based on our last conversation and your last record, you feel like you joined something, some kind of, I don't know, fraternity, sorority, what have you. You feel like you joined into something by getting married. Is that fair?
Yeah, it's, you know, I started thinking about, it's like married to the whole wide world, like all the people, but then also, well, animals, but also like on a molecular level, I think, because it just ties you in with just into the life, the death process. Like, you know, I think having a partner is a witness, and yeah, that's as best as I can explain it. Really.
Well, I remember the last time you were saying that you were talking about how you would end up in these conversations with relative strangers about just, you know, things your child was doing, you know, not sleeping or what have you. And you realized that there was this common language, like there was kind of this common experience all throughout your neighborhood or all throughout your community. And that really spoke to you. And I feel like that's swimming around on this record too. Like, these are common, we're connected. Like, we're all connected in a neighborhood, in a community, by, even if we've never spoken, you know, we end up doing a lot of the same things and having a lot of the same experiences. And it's through these sort of incidental, you know, conversations or happenstance meetings, your car breaks down, you meet a neighbor you've never talked to before. Again, I might be reading too much into this, but is that's kind of where you're at, I think. You're like, oh, I thought I was this, maybe, I'm not saying you thought this, but I think some of us think we're lone wolves, and the issues we have and the feelings we have are our own, but they're rather shared, aren't they?
Yeah. I mean, it used to be like, if you didn't have the first Meat Puppets 7-inch, then I didn't want to talk to you. But
that is some 80s snobbery if there ever is any. Wow. Yes, exactly. That is an interesting point. People view it as softening, but it's not, is it? It's empathy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's empathy. And that's, I mean, I think kindness is the answer to all our problems, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Really, like, we have the least kind president that I've ever experienced, and, you know, it would be, things would be a lot better if he was a little kinder.
Yeah.
No, I don't really want to get into talking about that, but
no,
that just...
Yeah, I know. I hear that. Before we leave Pigeons Behind, the song, not the animal, I have a couple of quick questions. The song begins with one of the... Every time I hear you say, "Hello, I'm Johnny Cash," I laugh. I mean, hear you say it, and you don't have to say it now. Please don't. But in the song, when I play the song, every time, I can't help it. I laugh out loud. First of all, I'm a big Johnny Cash fan. Student of Johnny Cash. I saw him play my first show ever at, do you know Massey Hall in Toronto? You ever heard of that?
Yeah.
It's like a relatively, Neil Young made it famous, I suppose, with a live album. But yeah, anyway,
yeah.
Very, very venerable concert hall in Toronto. So the first thing I ever saw at Massey Hall, Johnny Cash in 1996, and he looms large. So when I hear you say, "Hello, I'm Johnny Cash," which is a reference to his Live at Folsom Prison album, and it became kind of a catchphrase of his at every concert, I think, subsequent to that. Maybe you can correct me on that history, but I that's amusing. I don't know why you did it, but I laugh every time. And then it occurred to me more recently that you end the song with "Sincerely, L. Cohen." Sincerely, Leonard Cohen, I think, is what the reference is. So you, "Hello, I'm Johnny Cash. See you later, I'm Leonard Cohen." So it begs the question, do you have a cousin who works for Columbia Records? Why are you promoting these two people? What is going on?
Well, it seems like they needed a little bump, you know.
No, I'm making a joke, obviously.
you got to remember the little people once you've made it, like I have.
You have been peppering your songs with more pop culture names over the last few records, and on this record as well. Hopefully we can get to Ry Cooder, who is an interesting character in all of our musical lives. This figment of our imagination, it feels like, who pops up every once in a while. But anyway, let's focus on that. What's going on there? Why is the song Pigeons sandwiched between Johnny Cash and Leonard Cohen, if they are? Why did you reference them there?
Well, the Leonard Cohen thing is from, he says that at the end of Famous Blue Raincoat.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Really, it was an act of whimsy, I would say. And then later, you know, sometimes you can attach meaning to things. Maybe you meant, you know, after the fact. I really just did it because I thought it was funny and kind of like a collage or a sample, you know, like throwing a sample in there.
It doesn't have much to do with the sentiment of the song, those two figures?
No, I don't think so. I mean, it's just kind of like a what the fuck type of
sure. I guess if I'm going to look at it in a maybe heavy-handed way, which is what I do, my hands are heavy. Johnny Cash and June Carter Cash, on some level, the epitome of a showbiz marriage. Leonard Cohen, perhaps, you know, as much as he was a small, gruff-voiced, you know, art-poet guy, ladies' man. So you have the ladies' man, the epitome of single life, and then I think the epitome of married life, intermingling in this song about the nuances of marriage and relationships and what they mean, and what they mean to the outside world even. You know, when you're married to the whole wide world. Like, it's optics, too. To be married, there's an optic idea there. Your parents say, "When are you going to get married?" Your aunts and uncles say, "When are you going to get married?" It's like it doesn't even belong to you. So anyway, I don't know. Again, is this too much? I thought that was fascinating. The ultimate bachelor and the ultimate guy who had to settle down after, you know, a wild ride, Johnny Cash, you know, just was always in love with June. And mm-hmm. Yeah, anyway, I just thought that was fascinating. Maybe I'm reading too much into it.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that in that particular light. No. It's interesting.
Okay. Well, at the very least, it's interesting. I'm not going to get any answers, but there's no answer. I think that's weird. Maybe it's all subconscious on your part.
Yeah, I mean, I really love sampling and music, and it was just kind of it seemed more effective anyway if it was just me saying it instead of an actual sample.
Yeah, sure.
It's playing with the idea of identity and how can someone be two people at once and then actually he's neither of those people. And
The limo driver, you mean?
No, I mean, you know, first the guy says he's Johnny Cash and now he's saying Leonard Cohen.
Oh. Okay, right. Okay. Okay.
And then it's like, well, which one is he? And then you realize, well, he's neither.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I can totally appreciate what you mean by sort of a sample, cultural sample, if you will.
But also I've been thinking about like the discrete nature of man, you know, like we started out tribally, you know, as far as we can tell, like we were a tribal being at the dawn of human civilization. And then we kind of developed the self became the big, you know, I'm trying to find out who I am and
yeah.
I have to express myself, especially these days. Like everyone's got, you know, I got to express my story or whatever people say. It's gotten very extreme. And I was kind of think that like the self is a dangerous thing when you start thinking of yourself as separate from others, you know, mm-hmm. when really we're all just one big glob of something floating in space. And so, you know, it's just like a way to kind of play with that. And also just my own identity of getting compared to Cash and Cohen a lot throughout my career.
Yeah.
Just kind of, yeah, just kind of smashing.
Yeah. You're owning it.
Yeah. And also not.
Also not. Yeah. It's funny you invoke all of that because I was struck by a line in the song 35. I don't see myself in the books I read anymore. You were talking there about how it's so important these days for people to see themselves or to make themselves seen, I think. You know, this sense of I need to tell my truth, whether it's here's a sandwich I ate or here's a thing I think. And when you say in this song or when you write, sorry, the narrator says, I don't see myself in the books I read anymore. That's rather poignant. It's sort of a, not to use a pun given what the line is, but it's like a chapter turning. I'm a little off the grid in terms of what people are talking about and what kinds of realities they're reflecting. Is that maybe where you were coming from with that line?
No, not really. It's more about, and I, you know, I do hate to squash anyone's connection to a song because I think songs are supposed to be whatever you want them to be. And they're kind of, you know, I'm sure you've noticed just listening to a song. I can listen to a song 100 times and it affects me, but then without reading the lyric sheet, but then when I read the lyric sheet, it kind of changes. I was like, oh, I'd never even heard half of these lines, like at least not
yeah.
consciously.
That's what happened with Gold Record, to be frank. I didn't notice the Leonard Cohen line in the song Pigeons. I didn't hear what you said. I heard Sincerely L. Cohen, and I'm like, L. Cohen? Then I read it. I'm like, nope, Cohen. Okay, that changes the whole thing. Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, that's such a crazy thing about music is like some things you just don't question. Like you heard that line and you didn't stop to say, it didn't really like trip you up. You just like kind of let it go by, mm-hmm. even though mm-hmm. you heard it. That's just interesting about how people listen to music like that. Yeah, I don't know.
Well, music has a very fascinating relationship with our overall senses, I guess. I mean, it is ostensibly a, you know, oral or sonic experience. But like you say, if there's a lyric sheet or if we ever have the chance to see you live again, you know, there's a visual aspect, obviously, to it as well. And these days with, you know, it's fascinating to your point about earlier point about how like it's not as physical as it used to be because we're streaming everything unless we buy your records, but there is a visual aspect to it still in this weird way. We're reading about how to get to your record. So it's, yeah, I feel like it's the visual and sonic aspect are still very intertwined. It's just not a, a tangible thing for some people, I guess. You don't touch it. It's not, yeah, tactile, I guess.
Yeah. And I think that has been, well, my wife actually did her thesis on this, which is about how physical objects, how important they are to transmitting meaning, you know, and yeah. becoming part of our collective unconscious. Like, books are necessary for remembering things.
Oh, yeah, know? Yeah. No, I just unpacked. We moved from Ontario to Alberta, so I was unpacking. And my parents, before I left, said, "Why don't you take all your stuff from when you were 4 years old?" And I was like, "What? I'm just processing all the stuff I have from my 20s." But okay, and yeah, it's weird. Like, it's if I didn't, I mean, that's a sense of self thing. But within what I was, I mean, I just dug up all my VHS tapes and my and the CD compilations that don't exist anymore. And I thought about this time, you know, all my records. Like, I just, like, this time is going to, you know, when things sort of, I don't want to sound like an alarmist or conspiratorial, but like, all this non-tangible stuff may go, and there'll be no, it'll be a very ahistorical thing. Like, we won't have any sense of what we were. Sorry, I don't mean to go on a mini rant, but is that maybe what your wife's thesis was hinting at?
Yeah. And also, yeah, like, I set up an email account for my son, and I've been sending him photos and recordings of him and little short films of him, and I'm going to tell him about it when he's 18 or something.
Mm-hmm.
He can, but I don't even know if, is he going to be able to open those files?
Exactly. They, yeah.
You know?
It's the ADAT scare of the 90s is coming back to us in modern times. Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
It's weird. Yeah, anyway, yeah, I appreciate what you're saying about those things. I want to ask you about Protest Song, because it's a very poignant moment. It's funny. There's so much humor, as always, in your work, but this one has some anger in it, and it seems to be coming from a real place. Are you interested or willing to divulge more information about the song Protest Song? Because it seems to emanate from a real lived experience, potentially of you, Bill Callahan, something you witnessed and felt compelled to react to. What can you tell us about Protest Song?
Yeah, I mean, I started that song probably 10 years ago. I had that, you know, the idea for it. And I used to watch a lot of, well, we've talked about this before, like Letterman and all that, right? Talked about it last time, right?
And Larry Sanders Show, we talked about. I know you and I have a, yeah. I have to mention Larry Sanders Show every time you and I speak, because I don't get to talk about it with anyone else. And it's the greatest thing I've ever seen. So sorry, I just want to put that out there. But yes, you and I both have a strong affinity for late night.
Yeah. So I used to like watch those shows, at least back when there was only one or two happening. At,
Yeah.
Now I don't know how do you even pick one to watch? There's like 5 going on at once.
I stick with Conan when I can. I think he's the best guy. But that's just me. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what you got to do. Is just pick somebody.
Yeah. I like Seth Meyers too. I like his closer looks. Those are always. I feel like Jon Stewart left The Daily Show, and there's a bit of a void there. Anyway, this is a whole. Now we're getting into TV criticism, but I will say I like Seth as a writer. I think he's funny. But yeah. Anyway, right. You're right. It's. I don't know what happened with that industry, but everything else crashed, and late night is employing a lot of people, it seems. But yes, yeah, it's harder to figure out who and what to watch these days for that. I agree.
But yeah, I would watch. I kind of got fascinated with who was getting picked to play these shows, and
yeah,
it was kind of. What's that word when it's something you can't, it's so awful you can't look away, kind of.
It's so awful. Well, compelled, I guess, is not exactly right, but.
Yeah, there's a word that I just can't remember.
Yeah, I can't think of it either, yeah.
Yeah, I just kind of got very interested in, like, keeping tabs on that for a while, and I'm just kind of blown away by how awful it often was, and often it would be someone, you know, I'm someone who keeps up pretty well on music, but it'd be someone like I'd never heard of. And it's like, who are these people? Like, where do they come from? Are they just, and then you never hear from them again either. It's like, so it just came from sitting up late at night and, you know, kind of just having a little, like a Charles Bronson death wish.
Yeah, there's a whole dark side to show booking. There's so many stories about the bookers on Carson, you know, just having these weird, out-of-touch preferences for who they booked as stand-ups on the show, and so many stand-ups just being so frustrated that they couldn't get on. And I've heard this from musicians, too. Like, I think Stephen Malcolm has said, like, I can't get on those shows anymore. Like, I asked him about being on Letterman in one of our last chats, and I was like, I guess you'll probably be doing all the late night shows. And he's like, I don't think so. Like, I can't get on anymore. I don't know why. They just don't like us or something. I don't know. And it's funny you say that, because I'm sure you were watching it with the curiosity of like, why can't I get on that? I like Letterman. I want to do this one of these shows someday. Or do you? I know some people, the whole process is gross. It's very commercial and mainstream, and I'm sure you've heard the horror stories of people being like, yeah, I had to be there at 5 a.m. and sound check and then didn't go on till 4:30 in the afternoon. It's horrible. Like, it's not actually that much fun. Have you heard those things?
I have. And I would still do it. I don't really understand. I think maybe there's so many people that want to be on there, and I don't know how they choose.
Yeah.
I really don't.
I think it just depends on the booker. I think if the booker is an outgoing person or an adventurous person, I think the cynical point of view is that, oh, it's got to be someone that's popular. But as you say, sometimes it's not. It's not someone who's particularly popular. They just, you know, there's a lot of favoritism there, I'm sure.
And I think these days, you know, things have gotten a lot more PC safe. You know, like I remember seeing Captain Beefheart on Saturday Night Live in the early 80s. And, you know, they're not going to let him come do Bat Chain Puller any day soon on any of these shows, you know.
It's confusing, though, because I feel like also because of just the, I don't know, more widespread acceptance of weirdness. I don't follow it too much, but like if I even look at some of the Saturday Night Live bookings in recent years, some of them are like, to what you were saying, kind of like, who is this person? Oh, they're gone. You know, they did the show and then you don't hear from them again. But on the other hand, I'm like, that's kind of interesting that they would give this person this, you know, very coveted profile, like high profile, performance space. I don't know. It's weird. I think they want to. Some of the shows want to seem cool. That was a big thing about like when Jon Stewart had a talk show in the 90s, he would have all sorts of interesting musical guests because he wanted to seem cool, or they wanted it to seem like a cool show, you know? So I don't know. Yeah. I'm on the fence because I don't know.
I should say that since TV has changed, the way we, you know, receive TV has changed so much, like, I don't have live TV anymore, actually haven't watched any of those late night shows for about 5 years or something.
Right, yeah.
So I don't really know who's on there these days.
So this is an older song, protest song, you were saying. You started it 10 years ago, you said?
Something like that, but and finished.
Is it too name-call-y to ask you who inspired it or what?
I'd rather not.
Yeah. Okay. I just want to make, you don't want to start a fight.
I don't want to break anyone's heart.
It's just when you say, you know, you're messing, you know, boys, you're messing with a man's toys. That's very personal. I'm like, this is a musician saying, you don't know what you're doing and you're going to get a hoit, which I also thought was good. And I wondered if there's a whole lot of meaning in all of that. I'm sure.
Well. I mean, it's it's pretty much on the surface.
Yeah, it is. I just, for some reason, I want to know more, and it's not enough for me. It's interesting. I want to ask you about Ry Cooder. I alluded to Ry Cooder earlier. Ry Cooder is a very gifted American musician. He has loomed large, kind of on the sidelines in so many ways, but he's just kind of touched everyone. I just, because of your record, I looked him up, and I didn't realize that. Are you familiar with this performance between Ry Cooder, Bob Dylan, and Van Dyke Parks?
Oh yeah, with Van Dyke on piano. That's great.
It's amazing. That. They do Do Re Mi. It's fantastic, and I only watched it for the first time. I like Bob Dylan. I like Van Dyke Parks too. I've talked to him, and he's very lovely. Anyway, sorry. Tell me about your relationship with Ry Cooder and what inspired that song.
You know, I'd heard of him since the Paris, Texas movie, and so, you know, I knew of him, but I didn't really pay much attention to him until maybe 5 or 6 years ago. I think it was because of a record he made with an Indian guy that is called like By the River or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of piqued my interest, and I did a deep dive into everything he's recorded and was just really blown away by the variety but it's also the way he champions different music from all around the world, like without, you know, he's not just like, oh, this will be a nice little flavor on my record, like let me get this sitar player or whatever, you know. He really puts himself in the position of a student, I think, and is like, okay, teach me how to play music, and really gets in there, and just with so much respect and love for the music, and I think also for someone who's been working as long as he has, like he's still passionate about music, you know, and he doesn't have a jaded bone in his body, it seems like.
Mm. Yeah.
As far as, yeah.
See, it's a loving tribute to Ry then, and that comes across. It's Ry. It's your tribute to, sorry, that I didn't mean it. It's a funny, when I say Ry, it's a funny kind of tribute to Ry Cooder. It's amusing, but I feel like it is kind of historically accurate. The record you're talking about, I believe, is called A Meeting by the River.
Yeah, that's it.
And it was Ry Cooder and Vishwa Mohan Bhatt. So a little bit of my name and a little bit of my dad's name, actually. I need to check out this record. Was there any particular reason you thought now is the time to pay tribute to Ry? It's just what you said. You just kind of got into him and he was on your mind.
Yeah. It was like, it was one of the most recent songs for the record, you know, one of the last ones I wrote. And I also started thinking about, I shouldn't be talking about his passing or anything, but it's always kind of frustrating to me, like all these, you know, when a musician dies and then all of a sudden it's like all this love pours out for them and it's like, why not, let's start that love a little earlier, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I've been hearing that a lot more lately myself, that sentiment. By the way, I love you, Bill, if I might say. I love you.
Well, thank you.
I just want you to know that. I do. On that note, since we spoke, we have lost David Berman. David was someone I was a huge fan of and became friendly with, like a pen pal, I suppose. And I just like to check. He's on my mind every week. You knew him. How are you doing? It's been a year since we lost him. How's it going with you in terms of David's passing?
Well, when I couldn't believe it had been a year. It really didn't feel like that was possible when I realized, or when someone like pointed it out to me. You know, it's something I'll never understand, probably. And I think, you know, like when I made this record, I was like, oh, I wish David could hear this. And it just kind of enters, you know, when you, a person who passes away, they kind of, they remain in your life anyway, because, you know, I mean, you're not with all the people, you know, you have friends and that are alive and you think about them. I think about them all day too, even though they're not there. So it's kind of the same thing, you know, just like a friend that, you know, just like my other friend who is lives 2 miles away, like I can think about them and I can think about David and it's just hard.
Yeah, it is. It's the worst. And no, I appreciate that. I know I brought it up because you paid tribute to him. I think the first concert you had after he passed away. If I'm correct, you recorded this record in June of 2019. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So this was prior to losing David. I guess I'm curious if he has informed any writing of yours since. I assume I don't even know if you would call him an influence on your work as a friend, as a colleague, but I'm just curious about that. Is he floating around in your songs of late?
I think he considered us to be rivals, like friendly rivals, or I mean, he was pretty open about that.
Yeah, that's true. Did you see it that way?
I mean, not rivalry, but I do. It was always fun to kind of to put something out and then see what he was going to put out, and then, you know, almost like a conversation or something, just an album conversation.
You felt like you were communicating with each other with how good your songs might be in a way.
Yeah.
This David's going to be, I got him this time. Or, you know, he's like, oh, wait till Bill hears this, these couple lines, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think so. or just like, yeah, David's going to like this, or.
Yeah.
But we were planning on, it hasn't really been publicized that much, but we were, Will Oldham and me and David were going to do a tour together.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking, you know, we're in the process of figuring out what that would be and setting it up. And
Okay. Well, I'm sorry to pry on that level, but he just meant the world to me. And like I say, I'm thinking about it all the time. And so I just wanted to commiserate, I guess. I mean, obviously okay. Thanks for talking about David and talking about that. Before I let you go, you mentioned that you wanted David to hear this record. And it has occurred to me, I've talked a lot to you about the lyrics and some of the things you say. I am increasingly fascinated by your musical choices here. It almost sounds this record to be improvised musically. It's a little bit of found sound impulses. As someone who plays the drums, I'm very fascinated by your interest and lack of interest in drums. conventional drumming, rhythmic patterns, these kinds of things. It's beautiful, beautiful, gorgeous, new kinds of sounds, I think, for me and probably for other musicians. They'll pick up on it. But do you have any kind of, you know, overarching comment about just the sound of this particular record and your approach to instrumentation of late?
Well, it was very quickly recorded and mixed record. It was 7 days for all told. And whereas Shepherd was about 3 months. So all I really knew was I wanted some horns in it, because I hadn't used horns in a long time. And I'd been listening to a lot of jazz and just thinking about horns as a sound maker. And
yeah.
So actually that for the horn parts, like I had the parts that are very melodic and together, where the two guys are playing together, I kind of just hummed those to them. But then for the parts that are more improv-y seeming, I just let them improv because both of those guys are big improv guys.
Yeah.
So I wanted that. I really liked, because I think that, I mean, I love improv jazz, but it can be a little bit, it can wear you down if you listen to too much of it, or me speaking for myself.
No, it can be a little indulgent sometimes, maybe, or I don't know if that's the right word, but I'm with you.
It's just, it's on a certain plane that sometimes you're on and sometimes you're not, you know, like.
Yeah.
So I was trying to kind of get the best of both worlds with a record. It's like have a little improv mixed with some things that are fixed melodies. So that's partially affected the sound of the record. The drums we added, I tracked it, you know, me and Matt on guitar and a Jaime Ziversa on bass, and that's how it was all tracked.
Oh, okay.
And then drums came in later. We tried putting drums on a couple songs, like Protest Song and Rycooter, and it just seemed to take away from the action, kind of. It was distracting, and so it just didn't make the final cut in mixing.
Okay, you don't hate the drums, do you?
I love drums.
It's okay. You can. It's just safe space. If you hate the drums, you can say it. You don't have to say you love them if you don't love them. You like them. You enjoy them very much.
Drums are fucking cool, David.
Okay. By the way, earlier I said, Bill, I love you. You didn't respond. And then later, I love the drums. You love the drums more than you love me. I'm a human being, Bill. Good Lord. I'm offended. No, I'm not. I'm just kidding. I love the drums, too. And I finally have a house where they're set up and I get to play for chunks at a time. And sometimes I do, like, you know, the normal stuff, but sometimes I improvise. I think of the jazz or whatever, and it's fun. I like the drums. They're the full body workout, and they're fun. That's all I wanted to get at there.
Yeah, they're something special. You know?
they are.
A drum kit is...
They can be annoying. It depends on the player, I think. I hear the rhythmic impulses here, or the drums. It's fascinating to me that they were added later. I mean, that sounds complicated, but it's great. It's just a wonderful sound. I hope you're proud of it. I hope you feel like you're onto something with it, if I may. Does that make sense? I don't know.
Oh, you like that? I thought you were saying there wasn't enough drums on the record.
No, I think there should be less drums in the world. That's just because I hate myself. No, I think that's great. I don't think they're lacking. I think the approach to drums is great, fascinating. And I can't imagine drums on. You said there were songs that had drums. Like, I can't imagine Rycooter with like full on drums. You know?
Yeah. Neither could we.
Obviously. Okay. So in terms of what's next for you, given everything that's happening in terms of. Are you someone who's happy to be off the road and with your family? I assume that's there, but is it nerve-wracking to not be able to go on tour?
At first, it was kind of a relief, and we just did I've been doing some session things for radio, you know, where I film myself.
Yeah.
But that's all been solo. But a couple of days ago, we did one of those. Am I allowed to mention a different radio station?
This isn't a radio station. This is a podcast. Yeah, you can put anything you want to do is fine by me.
Okay. Then I would like to change this to a radio show.
No, you can't do. Well, I can try to. I'll shop it around. Sure. Why not? It used to live on the radio too, and it maybe can. But at the moment, it is a. Sorry. I hope this isn't making you upset to know that we're not live on the radio right now. This is a podcast.
No, I knew that.
Okay, good.
It slipped my mind.
Well, you and I have talked on the radio a bunch as well, so that I understand. Yeah. Anyway, yes, please, you've been doing some sessions.
Well, we did one of those tiny desk NPR things, and that was, I got to play with a couple people, and that was like the first time that I'd done that in many months, and Yeah, that felt really good and kind of made me, you know, it's like when they were packing up to leave, I was like, yeah, please don't go.
This was at your house. You didn't go to Washington. You didn't go to like the NPR headquarters or something.
Right. They're having people doing it. We did it in our outside.
Oh, great. Awesome. It's not really a tiny desk then. Do you have to bring a desk with you?
Yeah, they want you to put a little desk in the picture of some sort.
That's good. That's funny. Well, I mean, yeah, that's going to be potentially your performing future, it seems, for the foreseeable future. I did ask you about writing. This record, Gold Record, comes as, you know, fairly hot on the heels of your record that came out last year. Are you in the midst of writing and recording or planning to make another record at this point?
I've got something in the can that I'm not really supposed to talk about, but it's coming out.
Okay.
It's coming out next year. But there will be details emerging in a couple months, probably.
Are you feeling, I feel like you're probably always working and writing. It sounds like you are, but you're publicly more prolific. Is that fair to say? And if so, any particular reason why that might be the case, or is it just this is what you do and you're going to do it as much as you can now?
Yeah. I mean, I used to put out a record a year in my younger days, and just kind of been thinking, like, why not try to do that again? You know, it's what's the big deal? Why wait 5 years? And,
yeah. If you've got it, you can, yeah. Well, that's good. I'm glad. I hope you're able to record, given the pandemic and the restrictions. I hope you're able to make it into a studio.
Yeah, there's ways.
Yeah. Okay. So, if people want to learn more about this excellent new album, Gold Record, they can go to dragcity.com. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. And you are, last time we had a long talk about your, dominance of Twitter. Are you still enjoying being on Twitter? You are at Calaman, yes?
At Bill Calaman.
Oh, sorry. I got that wrong. I should have asked. But sorry, yes, at Bill Calaman. Are you still liking it?
Twitter is a bitch, you know?
I can't, you seem to embrace it and enjoy it. And I, as you may recall, I touted your unique abilities at the thing, but yes, it is not the greatest, is it?
I mean, it's definitely like, it's like heroin, I think, you know. It's really, really not good for us unless you're a musician, and then it makes you better.
okay. Well, still, is it okay if I direct people to follow you at Bill Calaman? That's a good way to keep tabs on what you're up to.
Yeah, I try to put some promotional stuff in there sometimes.
Sometimes. Yeah. Okay. Well, Bill, if we can go out on a song from Gold Record, if I can present one to people, what would you choose and potentially why?
What kind of listeners do you have?
Oh, they're generally fairly short. I've noticed that. They're small. They're also few. No, I don't know. They're all over the place. I try to keep the show kind of eclectic. You know what I mean? If I like a comedian or an author, I have an author on. And then if I like a hip hop person, I have them on. I had a thing. I just had Steve Von Till from Neurosis on. He mentioned your name, by the way, which I thought was weird. Just not because you're weird, but I was like, oh, I'm going to be in my head. I'm like, I'm supposed to talk to Bill. And then before that, I had like a Canadian, sort of folk rock person, Kathleen Edwards, on. So it's all over the place, I would say. And I mean, you've been on the show, so my audience likes you, and they like those things, I think. So it whatever you want. That was a really long answer. I'm sorry. I don't know how to answer that. I don't know.
Well, that's okay, because it was a really dumb question.
anything you want. I mean, we can play whatever you want. The record, oh, by the way, so the record's out, what is it, the 4th of September?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So this will be out just before that. So people will have heard, I guess, 9 of the 10 songs by that point. Yeah. Yeah. So, whatever you want to choose is fine by me.
Well, how about since it's going at the end of this, let's do Cowboy.
Cowboy is a seemingly a real country and western song. There's whistling. It has the pacing and the chord progression you would expect in an old western cowboy song. What inspired this song, and also why did you choose this one to go out on?
I think it has like a nice kind of relaxed air to, you know, ease us out of this conversation.
Oh man. Okay. Yeah, sure.
No, I mean that in a good.
Okay. Okay.
Transitions are important, you know.
That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. Okay. Well, let's go out on that. This is a beautiful song called Cowboy by Bill Callahan from his wonderful new record, Gold Record. Bill, it's always a tremendous honor and joy to get to speak with you about you and your work. I appreciate you indulging me in these things. And if I may throw out leave a matzo ball hanging, I love you and thank you for being you. And I hope we talk again soon.
All right. I think you maybe dropped out there for a second. I couldn't hear you, but
oh,
I got to. I'm just kidding.
The matzo ball hangs some more. Okay, that's good. Thanks, Bill.
Yeah, it's nice to talk to you.
Cowboy on the late, late movie. All I need is whiskey. Pattern and the anthem. off to bed you go, and off to sleep, and off to dream. That trail you ride
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
All of my gratitude and love, sure, how about I try again? All of my love to Bill Callahan for returning to this podcast and speaking with me again, this time for the 562nd episode of Creative Control, which is part of the Entertainment One podcast network and is available on all Apple and Google platforms and other things as well. If you can't find an episode that you're looking for, or if you want to learn more about me and sign up for my semi-regularly scheduled newsletter, please visit my website, vishkana.com. You can follow Creative Control on Twitter if you wish, at @vishcreative, or follow me directly at @vishkana. You can also visit patreon.com/creativecontrol to make a flexible monthly donation to keep this podcast going. And if you donate $6 or more, you have exclusive access to some of my older interviews that preceded this podcast in my lifetime as a journalist who spoke with people, including Bill Callahan. Perhaps I'll dig out and up. Maybe my first conversation with Bill Callahan must have been from 2009 or something like that, I think. Anyway, maybe I'll do that. But anyway, if you just want to support the show and you don't care about the frills, go to patreon.com/creativecontrol and make your monthly flexible donation today. Thank you. Oh, also, thanks again to liveatmasseyhall.com, where you can watch beautifully captured concerts by great Canadian artists. I didn't mean to give them a plug during my conversation with Bill when we were talking about Johnny Cash, but it ended up that way. Massey Hall is a big deal. It's a good room. And I love going to shows there, and I may never get to do it again. So what the heck? Go to liveatmasseyhall.com, and you can watch some shows there, and you can see what it was like to be in there, and hopefully you'll all get to go back in there someday soon. Me, maybe not. I don't know. Anyway, thanks to them. Also thanks to Pizza Trocadero, The Bookshelf, and Planet Bean Coffee in Guelph, and Granddad's Donuts in Hamilton for their in-kind support for this show. Thanks, as always, to my friend Jim Guthrie, who I saw Bill Callahan with. Jim came with me when I saw Bill Callahan touring behind Woke on a Whale Heart in, it must have been 2007 or 2008, I think, at the Music Gallery in Toronto. Anyway, Jim and I are old friends. He likes Bill. I like Bill. You can learn more about Jim and his work at jimguthrie.org. And finally, thank you very much for listening to this episode with myself and Bill, and I hope you enjoyed it. And if you're new to the show, welcome. There's lots of old episodes. If you want to subscribe to the show and or go through the archives and maybe talk to your friends about how you did all of those things, so maybe they do it too, that would be great. But if not, just keep it all to yourself and enjoy it at your leisure or leisure. I have to go. I will talk to you soon. Bye for now.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.